So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, I don't know, we're kind of dead. We're all just kind of trying to pick up our pieces, and I guess Apple announced some stuff? What?
God.
Oh, my God.
It never ends.
It never ends. So we are in the middle of, you know, Techtober. So we're reviewing a lot of devices. A lot of events are happening. And then all of a sudden, Apple just decided to announce several new devices out of the blue without like even saying, hey, there's going to be an event. So we're going to be talking about the new iPad Pro, the new base iPad, and the Apple TV 4K, and kind of what those all mean for Apple's lineup. They're a little confusing, especially the iPad. So we'll get right to that. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. And we typically do a live stream Thursdays, 10 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. For the next few weeks, we actually won't be because our video team needs a break. But in a bit, you'll be able to find that. I'd say just follow us on Twitter. It's probably the best way to know what's up. I'm at Devinder on Twitter. Sherlyn is at Sherlyn Lowe. You could keep tabs on everything happening on the podcast there. So we've got new iPads, Sherlyn, and I'm both like, okay, sure, there's an M2-equipped iPad Pro, as we expected. No big surprise there. It starts at $799. It has Wi-Fi 6E. And then there's a redesigned entry-level iPad, and I put entry-level in quotes because it starts at $449 for a 64-gigabyte Wi-Fi model. So this is basically the new basic iPad, the previous model, I think, I forget what gen, was that ninth gen last year? But the previous model, and for the last few years, they started at like $329, a great deal. I could always tell people, hey, do you need a tablet? Just go get that. Don't ask any questions. Don't look at the iPad Air. If you're asking me this, you don't need an iPad Pro. It always used to be very simple. Now, that equation has shifted a bit, because now you've got the old base iPad, you've got the new base iPad, which looks, you know, a little more like the Air. This is basically a rebadged Air. It looks like it has the A14 Bionic. It's like an Air from several years ago. It has the flat edges, a different design. It doesn't have a headphone jack like the Air as well. All very confusing. But then you've also got the iPad Air still sticking around with the M1 chip at, what does that start at, $599? So then there's that. And then there's the iPad Pro. So now you've just got a wide selection of iPads. And I feel like somebody in the market for a tablet right now is just facing a very, very strange wall of choices, right? Do I get the new base iPad? Do I get the old base iPad? Maybe I should just go for the Air. Maybe I'm a pro person. I don't know. Sherlyn, like, you are now in Appleville. You're looking more at all of these devices. Are you, like, does this make sense to you as a lineup? Are you, like, if you were looking for an iPad for yourself, what would you go for?
The Mini, I guess, right?
Like, oh, and the Mini's still around. Yes.
Yeah. Right? The Mini 6. So, I mean, look, of all the things that Samsung does that you would think Apple might copy, this strange portfolio array is the last thing that you would like expect, because Apple's usually had very clean product lines, very like, you know, clearly demarcated product lines. And now we've got this base iPad, which again, like you said, used to cost $329. It's now iPhone SE money, right? Which is like, I don't know how other people think of the tablets, but I think of the phone, even though it's a smaller device, but the phone is a more expensive device. The phone is where you would spend more money as opposed to a tablet. A lot of people, I think, that I speak to anyway, they're looking to spend $200 or less thereabouts.
Yeah, but, you know, it has a bigger screen. Like, I could see the argument.
I get that there's a bigger screen. Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's just that, I can see it both ways. The technology that goes into a tablet, especially a high-end one that's closer to the Surface lineup, that costs like $500 and up. And $500 is cheap, right?
And you can always add the $249 Magic Keyboard Folio to this new base iPad to turn it into a Surface-like device. So then this thing costs, you know, what, over, yeah, it's going to be
$449 plus two something. Plus that's two like something. $650 at least. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be $700 basically after all.
Yeah.
That.
Well, the other thing is too, like that now, what, did the keyboard just not with the base iPad before?
They had a keyboard. I believe it was around the same price. It was like $200.
It was around $250. But it wasn't like built this way. It didn't have that kickstand. It didn't turn it into like a laptop wannabe, right?
It did have a folio type of thing. I just, on the old base iPad, there was something you could get for it. I forget if it was exactly like this.
Yeah. Right.
This one looks newer and fresher. This one looks more like a Surface keyboard for sure.
Right. That's what I'm seeing, at least in our coverage of the base iPad, is that like the new keyboard cover, there's also the camera on the base iPad is now landscape orientation. They've put it along the long side instead of the short side, which means you're expected to use this held horizontally now when you're calling people or taking photos. And it's like they're looking at the base iPad as also a Surface wannabe, a laptop wannabe now, right? As opposed to like the held vertical sort of tablets.
I don't know. No, the camera's in the same spot from what I can tell. I'm looking at the comparison of the iPad 9th gen and 10th gen here. So it's still in the, like, if you're holding it up portrait-wise, it's still in the top, you know, corner, basically. It looks like the same position. But I see what you're seeing. I see what you're saying, Sherlyn.
The positioning of this product is definitely different, yeah.
The positioning is different. And then you have to start asking yourself, like, what is the iPad? Like, is it a computer? Is it just a cheap tablet? I feel like just my sense, like, I'm always looking for a good deal. And when I hear an iPad is closer to $300, I'm like, that feels good. That's a good tablet for kids. You know, that's a good thing. My daughter has an older base iPad that only has 32 gigabytes of storage, but we use that for all her streaming shows and stuff and in the car. And I pay like $250 for that after sale someday. So, you know, that part makes sense. But then if you have one starting at $449, then my brain is like, oh, that's $500 basically. Like,
yeah.
After tax, I'm paying a lot more. I'm paying almost twice the price, but a significant amount more. This just seems super confusing. And then it's like, okay. So this looks like a nice redesign. At least it looks like a nicer computer, but then you could go to the iPad Air, and the Air is faster with the M1 chip. It has a laminated screen. It's probably a little thinner and lighter too. Then it's like, okay, what's the difference between the Air and the new base iPad? For a lot of people, maybe just speed and style a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I just want to clarify some of the confusion over the camera we were talking about before. I was talking about the selfie camera.
And you're
talking
about
the rear camera. Yeah. So the selfie camera is now on the long side, not the short side, right? So again, when you're using it for calls, to your point of the difference between the base iPad and iPad Air, yeah, there's like not a huge difference anymore. Other than, from what I can see anyway, these colors are kind of fun.
Sure, like, fun colors.
To distract you from
they're like jabbing you. Yeah, fun colors.
I don't mind it. I mean, that's the theme, right? It seems like, wasn't there like a Mac line like that we have? iMac? Was it not the iMac? Was it the iMac that had like the fun colors
original,
recently?
The original. I mean, the newer iMacs had some colors. I mean, that goes back to the original iMacs, the old CRT iMacs, right? A bunch of colors there. I just feel a little strange about this whole thing. Also, because I've been sort of like eyeing an iPad for myself for a while too. And I haven't been able to pull the trigger. I'm like, should I get the mini? The mini is so cute, but maybe I should just get the Air. Maybe I want a bigger screen. I want to use as something to type on and write stuff on eventually. But maybe I should just go pro. Maybe I should get that pro res screen. And now it seems like it is all even more confusing. My other question for you, Sherlyn, who is the iPad Pro for anymore? Like, you're spending $799 on a tablet that has the M2 chip, the same chip that is in, you know, the new MacBook Air, the new MacBook Pros. It's a very powerful chip. They didn't scale it down, but it's an iPad. I feel like that is like trapping, you know, a very fast car in a very like limited frame, right? Or a small track. Like, it can't just do much. Who do you see the iPad Pro for at this point? Because I feel like it's getting more and more confusing as well.
I mean, that's a good question, right? I don't even know who I would say the iPad Pro is for. But I think in the same way that I don't know who the iPhone Pro Max is for, like, there's people who would deliberately go for the iPhone Pro Max.
They just want bigger. That makes sense, yeah.
Right. And longer lasting battery or whatever, like super high-end features. I think the Pro has the 120 hertz screen, right? It has ProMotion.
Yes. Yeah, they have ProMotion.
So...
Yeah. So you get that.
If you want that on the iPad body, on the frame that's as small as the iPad, sure. iPad Pro, sure. But like, then you have to be like a person that comes from money. Right? Like, you're...
Because it's something you get on top of your very nice
Existing laptop.
It's not going to replace your laptop. I think, for a lot of people, even though Apple keeps telling us like, oh, yeah, yeah, the iPad Pro is a fully functional computer. Look, it's just as powerful as a MacBook. It can do, it has Stage Manager. It, you can multitask apps. You could do all sorts of stuff. I just feel like if you were a normal consumer and your choice was between the iPad Pro and one of the new M2 equipped MacBooks, you just get the MacBook. Guys, like, just get the MacBook Air. I was actually just chatting with our editor-in-chief, Dana Wollman, about this, too. Like, she was wavering between the M1 Air and the M2 Air. I'm like, new Air is really nice. Like, it's a nice design. It'll last you for a long while. It's really thin and light. And once you add, like, a keyboard to the iPad Pro, you're not actually saving weight compared to a MacBook or a MacBook Air, even. So I just feel like we're in a weird, very weird place. I've talked to a lot of Apple fans who are like, I love my iPad Pro. I couldn't live without it. I love just pretending it's a computer. I just don't know. I feel like you could do much of those same things on a base iPad or just get a MacBook. I don't know, folks. But let us know. You know what, listeners? I'd love to know what people are thinking about this podcast at Engadget.com. What's up?
No, I mean, like, back to like really round out this, right? Like, I'm looking at Apple's page now where it says buy the iPads, because I'm looking, because I suspected, and I am correct, that the iPad Mini is more expensive than the new base iPad, right? $449 compared to $499. Yeah, just a teeny bit. And it looks like they're still selling the base iPad, the ninth generation that starts from $329. So I guess you still have that. That's the only one that still uses a Lightning connector instead of a USB-C. Sure, so there's that. But, I mean, damn, like... What?
I also wish they had refreshed the iPad Mini too, because now it's like, I want power. I want power, but I mean,
it's A15 instead of M1.
A15 is nice, but then it's like the Air has an M1, you know? But then also, maybe I need that bigger screen. Maybe it'd be better for more comics and stuff. It is, I am at an indecisive iPad point, and I don't know. It's very much a first world problem, but it is confusing, and Apple, I think, just made it more confusing. But you know what is cut and dry? What is cut and dry to me, and what is genuinely a good upgrade, is a $129 Apple TV 4K with 64 gigabytes of storage by default instead of 32, HDR10 Plus support, and that nifty little new Siri remote we talked about last year. Hey, that's a big discount. The Apple TV 4K used to sell for $179 at the base price before, and now Apple has like dramatically reduced that, added new tech. Do you have an Apple TV, Sherlyn?
I sure do. I don't know which one I have. I got it into Test Fitness Plus a while ago.
You have one of the more recent 4Ks. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So also my TV is broken, whatever. And I think I've always had just a 1080p TV.
Yes.
But I've had the box, and I don't know. I mean, not knowing that I didn't have to spend money on it. I'm privileged in the sense that I didn't have to spend the money on it. The price drop doesn't seem like a big thing
that's
stood
pretty
out
big.
To me, but
big,
it's not,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not arguing that it's a lot of money. I'm just saying I didn't even know it cost like $180.
you're just so out of, you're so
that
out
is
of
some
touch
BS. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
what the
exactly.
Pros have to pay. It's always been very expensive. And I feel like the argument for Roku devices was like, hey, you could just get a Roku stick for $50 and it's very good. And it has 4K and
or
Dolby Vision.
Or any number of other sticks, or, right? Like Amazon's.
Any number
sticks.
Of other sticks, but the most premium Roku, and I say Roku because they've been the longest serving, you know, sort of like streaming devices. The Roku Ultra is $100. So the Apple TV 4K has always been like creme de la creme. It's for people who really want that Apple experience. I think it's kind of fascinating. They're just like lowering that price. And also, if you want 64 gigabytes of storage, because there are games and stuff you can play on this thing. If you want 128 gigabytes, because the base is now 64, 128 is now $149, and that model also has an Ethernet jack. So you can actually connect it to your hardline, you know, network. It supports Thread mesh networking for IoT devices. So all of a sudden, I would say, you want a new Apple TV, people? You probably don't even need to look at that 64 gigabyte model. Go for the 128 gigabyte. It's good to have Ethernet if you end up in a setup where you may end up wiring things, but also that Thread connectivity could be useful down the line. I don't know.
Yep.
IoT stuff, is, it's hard to predict, but you know, could
Thread
be
is
good.
Part of the Meta protocol. Yes. So, yeah. So for sure it will be, and it will allow you to cross, like, use your devices with other like home assistants or platforms, that sort of thing. I also want to point out that like the thing you say about like storage is incredibly underrated.
Yeah.
Because like
yeah.
my Chromecast, maybe I don't even know how much storage it has, but definitely not as much as 64 gigs, like barely even.
Yeah, Chromecast barely have storage because they're not yeah. meant to install apps. It's all about.
But here's the thing. Yeah. I keep running out of space to install apps because like I'll get bored. I'll sit on my couch and be like, what can I install on my TV Chromecast to make it more fun? And I'll be like, oh, I want to install this karaoke app or two or three. Because the different ones have different catalogs, yeah. and I'm like,
I feel like
let's
you
need
to spend
it.
More time with your Apple TV when you get your TV back up and running. Because there
I
are
find more apps,
apps
there. Yeah, yeah. So no, so I, but I've been yeah. experimenting with the Chromecast, and I'm still a Google first person. Okay, loyal listeners of the Engadget podcast,
yeah.
know me, know that I'm like reluctant to let go of my allegiances, whatever. So I still want to do my Chromecast first, even though the Apple TV has been more reliable. Anyway.
I love that you're saying you're Google first while you're talking about this horrible, like terrible Google Chromecast experience.
Right.
Like,
that is fair.
Please keep
well,
telling
so
us about
let me continue. Yeah. Let me tell you yeah. how much. Yeah. This is how loyal I am. So like I have like a weird smart home hierarchy, which is Chromecast is like Google stuff is my first like go-to. But like when I really need backup devices because I have units in that are like mm-hmm, review mm-hmm. units, I will use my Amazon and my Apple stuff to stand in while I get the Google stuff up. So I like on my hierarchy, like Amazon is like third place, the bottom of the bottom. Like the second I can stop using my Amazon speaker, I will. And then there's the Apple TV. But to that point, I just want to finish that point about like running out of space, which is that like, yeah, I mean, three karaoke apps and then they're like, oh, you ran out of space. You can't install this. Delete something else. I'm like, wait, you want me to install Fubo TV? You want me to install Pluto? You want me to install IMDb, Sundance TV? Like, I can't keep installing these things and running out of space because you keep recommending me new stuff to install too, Google. Like, there's kind of a... Like not a double-edged sword, but it's like a almost a mutually exclusive proposition.
It's
here,
so. I would love to know which Chromecast you have and how much storage that comes with by default. But hey, you know the good thing about Chromecast is that they're cheap. Do you know which one?
Yeah, the Chromecast with Google TV that they launched when they launched Google TV maybe like last year or 2 years ago. Mm. So
yeah, I don't know how much built in, but that's a small
maybe
device.
Like 8 or 16. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so hey, it's good to have storage. I think when Apple first launched this Apple TV 4K, it was unclear why they had like multiple storage options because there really weren't that many Apple TV apps. There were some games you could download that actually worked pretty well on it, but you know, it wasn't a huge library. Now I think the games are bigger. You can actually get some pretty like impressive games running on that thing. And now also has a newer processor, not the latest. It has an A15. That's pretty good. You know, it's going to be faster. It's going to be snappier. I'm hopefully going to be taking a look at this thing soon. So I will be reporting back. But basically, if you were in the market for an Apple TV, just sit and wait, folks. And we will see if the new one is worth it. It's certainly much cheaper than the old one. So you're like, everybody wins. You get a cheaper device that has more features. Sounds great. Sounds great to me. Apple will stop selling, or they have stopped selling the old HD Apple TV. So, you know, that's just kind of a crummy thing if you have an older TV. I almost feel like they should just put out some sort of like dongle type of thing too, but that is very anti-Apple. I can't imagine they'd want to do like a $50 stick like Amazon and Roku, right?
Right?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you just that. Like, do you think we're going to get an Apple TV stick at any point? Don't know. Don't think so. Doesn't seem like their kind of thing. We don't even have the, like, even the mini HomePod was like a big deal that they made. And
but
then,
the
like,
mini HomePod has been a huge success. Like, the original
yeah.
HomePod
yeah.
sucked.
Gone.
Like, nobody, exactly. nobody wanted it. It was too expensive, too limited. The mini has been a huge success. I feel like it's a very different market. And all the stuff Apple has done to bring the Apple TV app into other platforms. So if you have a TV, if you have a new TV, you can get an Apple TV app. If you have a Roku device, you can get the Apple TV app. So maybe they don't even need to do that. They could just like rely on their ecosystem kind of spreading out. But at the same time, I could see Apple doing like a $75 dongle that is like the best streaming thing you can plug into your TV, maybe, or yeah. to an older TV. I guess we'll see. But yeah, keep an eye out for the Apple TV 4K. Any questions about this, Sherlyn, or thoughts?
No. Quick pointing out that I found out how much the Chromecast with Google TV has in terms of storage. And multiple Android and Google blogs have written about this in 2021 when it launched. Android Police, how to deal with the new Chromecast tiny storage space. Yeah, 8 gigs of storage space.
Oh my
God. Of which something like 4 gigs is devoted to OS and like that sort of stuff. So like,
I hate you, Google. What are you doing?
I get it. It's
doing?
A tiny little thing. Yeah, just maybe come out with a, well, there's an Android TV box from long ago.
That's old. But yeah. I mean like 8 gigabytes of storage, even in a dongle type of box, like get 16 in there. Don't be... Google will always prioritize the, I feel like, cloud saving a little money over maybe a good user experience. So,
But we did see a rumor or report from 9to5 Google in August this year that the Google TV storage minimum might be doubled in 2023. Who knows? We'll see.
Doubled to 16 gigabytes?
To 16, right? Imagine three more karaoke apps.
Thank you.
Three more.
Thank you, Google. Thank you, benevolent overlords. Oh. Let's move on to some other news. And there's some sad stuff to start off with. Specifically, there was a story that Microsoft is laying off hundreds of employees. I think the initial report was under 1,000 people. And we just wanted to point this out because it is a little strange. It's strange that this company that has been doing very, very well, I've been reporting on their like earnings reports over the last several years. And it's always Microsoft makes more money than ever. You know, thanks to the cloud, thanks to Azure, Microsoft is just printing money. And this seems like a weird thing. And maybe they're afraid of like the upcoming, maybe a financial, crisis of some kind. Like they're planning for some sort of bad things to happen. A lot of companies are doing this where they're trying to like minimize the amount of money they're spending. So that, if we do have a financial incident of some kind, there won't be in a worse spot. But it just sucks. It sucks that that's a lot of people. And also apparently a lot of like long timers, people who were there since the 90s too, were also let go. So just kind of a rough thing. You know, in July, I don't know if we talked about it here, but Microsoft also laid off 1% of its workforce, around 1,800 people. It's a big, big company. So maybe sometimes they have to do this, but it also seems really counterintuitive when they're more successful than ever. Right, they're raking in money. The cloud is doing really well for Microsoft, but they still have to do this. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, it reminds me of, I mean, first of all, I thought there was a labor shortage, but okay. Yeah. Number two, it reminds me of when all the airlines let go of all of their like airport staff and employees during the pandemic, and then now the air industry is effed as F because we need people to work them again. And then we're having multiple delays because we can't get runways ready in time because everyone got laid off. And then no one wants to come back to work because you unceremoniously laid them off. And like,
even though a lot of these companies got funds
bailouts
from the government. Yeah.
I'm still not over the fact that we saved multi-million dollar, huge businesses that didn't need our help in the pandemic.
Yeah.
Hey.
I mean, hey.
And then they laid off everyone that actually needed the money.
Yeah. Welcome back to the 2008 financial crisis as well, too. Right.
PTSD. Yeah. So, that's what it was reminding me of, right? Like what you just described, what Microsoft is doing. So we'll have to see. I think this is a sort of wait and see situation where like maybe they did this and it was all for nothing, or maybe they really do have a lot of foresight. But whatever it is, I'm hoping they, at least did it with grace. Like they gave good severance packages maybe, or...
We should see. In my coverage of Microsoft, I've just noticed that they've become like a better and better company in terms of treating their workforce well, supporting diverse employees in general, really focusing on accessibility, as you've covered. This is just sad to see. And ultimately, like what it comes down to is like these are numbers on a spreadsheet, right? Like somebody was like, we could save this amount of money and return this much value to the people, to our stockholders, by letting these people go. And it kind of sucks. And actually kind of related to that too, G4, the gaming TV network that Comcast had started less than a year ago, it was about 11 months ago, is also shutting down. And that's because Comcast, first of all, I don't think anybody really wanted a cable gaming channel. It was a weird idea to bring back G4, but they brought back some of the original talent. They hired a whole bunch of people. They brought back Olivia Munn, Kevin Pereira, Chris Hardwick, who were on the original channel. I just don't know. Did you ever watch G4 like back in
the
day? Did you know what G4 was in Singapore?
Nope.
Yeah. Was there anything?
Wait. Yeah. This was back when Singapore, like this was 10 years ago?
This was over 10 years ago. Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, this, I thought this was a Queenie thing.
Baby like... Sherlin, like early 2000s, wherever you were.
Yeah.
So did you guys have any sort of like tech networks or something? Like
no,
something
you guys talk about Twit, and I'm like, no, I just like it's not as huge overseas as it is for y'all. Yeah.
Let me give you some history. So back in the day, there was this thing called ZDTV, which Ziff Davis,
like ZDNet,
had started a TV network, and I believe that was co-founded by Paul Allen, a co-founder of Microsoft. That was later transformed into Tech TV because ZD was not a brand that people understood even back then, and then Tech TV was more of a general hey. Look, cool tech shows. Leo Laporte had several shows on ZDTV back in the day. But yeah, they had a major show. Like they had a tech talk show. They had interviews. They ran like documentaries and other like there were gaming shows and as well. So this was like the late 90s. And I just ate that stuff up.
Yep.
That was my lifeblood. And I was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to do all of this. And that's kind of what I had been working towards in college and afterwards, too. And then, hey, I don't know. I think I kind of got there. But by the time I got there, TV networks had collapsed, right? Tech TV was dead. It was reshaped into G4 in the early 2000s, which was a little more gaming focused. Leo Laporte went off and did his own thing. And Twit was like, that was like one of the first podcasts. When that started too, right. I was working in IT back in the day. So it's a whole thing. I don't know who G4 as a brand is for, except for nerds like me, and maybe not as much nerds like me. Like it was the people who kind of spent more time with the G4 version of that network rather than Tech TV and everything, right? So it was a weird thing. I hear they didn't have much marketing support, so they basically launched a cable network without really pushing it to people. And they're also competing... They're competing with everybody online, like every single person online. They're competing with Video Game Donkey. They're competing with all the streamers and everybody. So I don't know if it makes sense to start a whole cable network where you have to pay people a ton of money. There were also some reports that some people, especially like personalities, like gaming personalities who came on, were paid like $20,000 to $30,000 for a spot just to do...
Wow.
One episode or a segment or one day. So there was a lot of like unsustainable things. A lot of people I know and I follow in the gaming community who ended up working there, they had good people, but they didn't really have like a good corporation supporting them. So I don't know. Sad. RIP G4 again. I hope the people who found out they didn't have a job anymore on a Sunday because the story had leaked on Deadline Hollywood, I believe. The story had leaked out. Wario64, the Twitter deal bot, not bot, but the Twitter deal guy, basically announced that news too. He's like, hey, heads up. G4 is no more. And that's how
Wario coming for our jobs.
I don't trust Wario. He's definitely a boss. He's a landlord of some kind. But yeah. A lot of people just learned that, hey, they didn't have a job anymore thanks to Wario and stories on a Sunday. So the media business is in a shambles. It's all a mess. Let's talk about one way another company is trying to keep themselves afloat. Have you seen this story about Netflix charging extra user fees? We talked about a bit of this last year, I think, or earlier this year. The story is, officially, starting next year, Netflix will be charging people extra fees if you have other people signing onto your account from, I guess, other locations elsewhere around the world. Thoughts on this? Like, we don't know what the fees are yet, but it is a thing we've heard that has been
covered. I saw this on Reddit. I didn't click in because I thought this was already reported before, because I know that Netflix has been changing its fees or looking into this.
They were testing it in Latin America. That was the big thing. Yeah.
Right. They were testing it in LatAm, and they were also, were they the ones doing an ad-free version? Not ad-free, an ad-supported
tier? There is an ad-supported version that just launched. They announced it, at least. It launches November 3rd. It will cost $7 a month with ads.
Right.
I won't be so, doing that, but it's a version. It's a thing out there for people. Yeah.
Right. So now you got to pay money for the ad version, and the money that you pay is the amount of money that Netflix cost when it launched. But okay. And then sure. And Hulu used to be like free with ads, and now you pay to not have ads. And so now you pay to have ads. It's just like a cycle of like self mind like exploding thing for me, but I guess inflation, and I guess this is the way the world works now. But no, this makes me like kind of annoyed. Like, I don't know. I think this is the way, like, what's happening is Netflix needs to keep making money, right? And keep breaking revenue targets and setting themselves higher and higher targets, where it's like they're not being very realistic. They didn't used to have to
be concerned about that, but now they are.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, but that's part, because why? Because there's a finite number of people with TVs in the world.
Yeah, they've kind of plateaued the amount of subscribers they have, and they're losing subscribers. So
maybe set yourself more realistic targets, Netflix. Like, how about, now we would profit from something else. Right, this is capitalism. Like, why do we have to keep hitting bigger and bigger numbers? Or how about like just say, hey, we're done. We're gonna make this much money next year too, and that'll be great.
You can't because if you're a public company, you answer to the shareholders. You know, that's ultimately it. Yeah.
Right. Or find another way to make money, like bring in, like, you know, collaborate with other people to bring in creative content that you know we get paid for as well. Or like, they're already making their own content that's to draw in subscribers.
They wasted so much money. I think the problem was they wasted so much money, hundreds of millions of dollars, like, so just pure garbage. Like the Will Smith movie, Bright, a lot of their big budget things, all those Ryan Reynolds movies, the one with The Rock, just big, dumb, expensive movies that cost way too much. The Gray Man, the one with Ryan Gosling and Captain America, cost, I think they're reportedly like $200 million, looks like garbage. Like, it's not even a fun action movie, but they wasted this money because they feel like that was the way they had to get subscribers. And now what they're doing is like, okay, we're just going to punish you. We're just going to like nickel and dime you to death because we don't know how to deal with our finances, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean... good luck, Netflix. And you're not going to just see this. My other thing is, we're not going to see this from just Netflix. We're going to see this also from all the other streaming companies, right? We're going to see, I guess, Disney Plus do this. We're going to see maybe Hulu's doing its own thing. I don't even know.
I feel like Disney Plus has at least, they're more expensive, I believe, to stream than Netflix to start. And also, Disney Plus is like rock solid. Parents will always need them. Anybody, any family with kids, grandparents, whoever.
Yes, they do have great titles and great content. But I do think that they're also going to hit that plateau point of no more new users, and they're going to have to figure crap out.
Maybe. The difference is it's Disney, and they own Star Wars and they own Marvel, and they're just like, we're just going to keep pumping this stuff out.
They can keep churning out the movies, but you're going to, again, face the same problem of saturation in the market where they've
Disney's a whole other everyone. Business. The difference is Disney Plus is like one part, right? One part of the Disney pie. They have theme parks, they have movies, they have everything. Netflix is just like, this is all I have.
Oh my God. This is all I have. Wait, yeah. Hang on. What if they made a Netflix theme park? See, that's how you make money, Netflix. You just steal the Disney idea.
Yeah.
Make a Stranger Things theme park.
I feel like they're probably going to do something. There is actually a Stranger Things type of haunted house or some sort of experience happening.
Right.
Here
there
in Atlanta,
you go. Make money from that.
How much money can you make from that? Unless you're
instead
Disney.
Of licensing, they have a lot of strong brand. What they need to do is build franchises and then make money off of merch and franchise like experiences like that. Who knows? Hey, I'm not a business development manager. Do your own work, Netflix business people. Jeez,
there's certainly a lot they could have done. They could have started by not blowing so much money, just blowing a ton of money like out the gate because they were so desperate to get subscribers. I think you're right, Sherlyn. I do think the game for the 2010s was, we got to do whatever it takes to get subscribers. Like, whatever it takes. Pay as much as it costs.
Remember they bet on gaming? They were like, oh, we're going to put games in your
phone.
They
do. But they did put games. They're buying game studios. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Actually, they waste the money on that, too.
It's actually working out pretty well for them. So I don't know.
Really?
I don't know if that's wasting money. Apparently, it's keeping people engaged, and it's keeping people subscribed.
Have you played games on Netflix?
They can't...
you played games on Netflix?
Yeah,
sorry.
I've played some games from theirs.
I played Snake on there.
There's a handful of things, but they're actually big games that, you know, that people would like. It's all about, like, keeping you in. They can't keep losing subscribers, and they also have to get more. So it's a balance, and I feel like Netflix is just in a weird, weird spot at this point. I see Ben is asking about Bandersnatch, the interactive game. That actually doesn't count as a Netflix game, but it's not a game. It is a thing they have experimented with. I do think that idea of, like, hey, we have this platform where we can – you have a device that can give you choices, and we could just point you to a different stream. It could be a thing. I'm glad they experimented with that, but you know, it's not quite the thing that happened. I guess we will see. This is a very weird spot for Netflix, but I do feel like for a lot of people, Netflix was just kind of like the new standard, right? Like, I just will always have a Netflix subscription because it was cheap. It was relatively cheap. It gave me enough stuff to watch. Now it's like, do I need you in my life? What? Things are good. Yeah.
Let me put on my business developer hat one last
again,
time.
Again. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Netflix shouldn't just be a streaming company. And I think they know this. Mm-hmm. They're an entertainment company, mm-hmm. right? So you just got to think about what keeps people entertained. And yes, gaming is a big thing. What else?
Porn. Porn. Netflix. Oh. Porn. Let's go. Netflix.
Oh my God. They're gonna...
Netflix buys OnlyFans.
Oh, I okay. So if I were a gambling person, now I'm switching out my business developer hat for my I went to Vegas hat. I would bet money that instead of going towards porn and adult films, I mean, there's already adult films in there. They're going towards sports streaming, maybe. Like, they're going to fight with Apple and Hulu and whoever else that has to, like, the streaming
licenses.
That's the
thing people have talked about. Sports could be a big thing because people pay a lot of money for sports subscriptions and stuff. But you know what? I think Apple has kind of beaten them on that. Like,
Apple got MLB, but who's got La Liga? Who's got EPL? Like,
we shall see. It's going to be a huge battle. But basically, I think for the past 10 years, Netflix was like on the tops, right? They were dominating everybody, outspending everybody. Now they're on the defensive and we're kind of seeing like how they're reacting as a company. And it's not pretty. Like, I think a lot of people are going to be turned off by this. It may give up on their Netflix entirely. So I guess we will see. Let's talk about some tech. You know what I like? I like standards. I like cables.
I have none. I have no standards.
I like large bandwidth. I like large upstream and downstream bandwidth.
I would like more bandwidth too, yes.
We all need more bandwidth. I'm talking about the next generation of Thunderbolt, which Intel just recently teased. It basically looks like an evolution of USB 4, according to our report about it right here. I think the big thing is, so it's still going to look like Thunderbolt, still going to look like USB-C. It's going to have that little lightning cable on it. There is no official name for it yet, so we don't know. Currently, we have Thunderbolt 4 is like the latest final version. This could be Thunderbolt 5. It could be something else. It seems like the big thing here is you get more data for extra displays. So it typically offers 80 gigabits per second of bandwidth for like USB 4, spec 2, but it can go to 120 gigabits upstream and 40 gigabits downstream to deal with screen refresh rates and resolutions for external monitors. So you can also you could potentially like chain several monitors next to your device and power it all through a single cable. That'd be kind of cool.
It would be very cool. I'm excited. Cool. I mean, I think I mean this is probably the standard that Apple is going to get on. You know what I mean? Like, this is when we eventually see actual universal adoption, hopefully.
Hey, Microsoft finally has it, right? Like, it took years, but as of last year, Microsoft finally adopted Thunderbolt, and that's also coming to their newer devices. So that's something.
Yeah. Something. Yeah, I mean, by what Apple is adopting, I meant USB-C, not just Thunderbolt, because, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see speeds get better, feeds get better, et cetera.
Feeds get better. And also, like, you know, even Apple's moving to USB-C for other devices now, for iPads, maybe iPhones eventually, maybe other things. I do feel like the one thing, I have an iPhone 13 Pro right now. The one thing that keeps killing me with all of my iPhones is the freaking Thunderbolt, the lightning jack. Like, the lightning port gets dirty, gets linty. And I have trouble even with like brand new cables of like, okay, are you plugged in properly? Are you charging? It's annoying for charging. It's extra annoying when you're doing like Apple CarPlay, where if the thing jiggles a little bit, you lose your CarPlay connection, which is bad if you're relying on that for like navigation and other things too, or listening to stuff. So go ahead.
Have a conspiracy theory.
They're going to kill ports altogether. Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's kind of what they were discussing when we were talking about, you know, Apple moving towards USB-C. They're saying a lot of people on my Twitter were like, no, they're probably going to do portless. And that is a rumor that's been floating around. My conspiracy theory is more like a retrospective conspiracy theory, which is that the Made for iPhone program, where like only the cables that are under this like license can like charge you at that speed. I mean, this isn't so much a conspiracy theory as just me ranting about the fact that this program exists and like people clearly, accessory makers like like, I don't know, let's say Targus or OtterBox or whatever, to have their device charge at a normal slash faster speed, they have to probably pay Apple some money for that, which in turn is passed on to the consumers. So you get like the really expensive charging cables that work at a normal speed. Meanwhile, anything you buy off of Amazon or from China is not going to, no, it's straight up just not going to work. They straight up just block it, and it, you either can't use it or it charges at like 1 megabyte per second. Or I mean, that's not charging, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, slower rate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's infuriating to me that like this is allowed in the first place, and also that ties in with everything Apple has been doing. Like, this is why I still have my loyalties, because Google, if you use a USB-C charger, if you have the correct brick and the correct standard of cable, which is like 2 or 3 or whatever, these are all standards.
Those are standards.
Not like
a special licensing
program.
I don't give Google credit for that. Only
I know,
because
that's not credit.
It is the least effort option. It's like, oh, the USB form did all this work. Let's just take that work and put it in there. Which Apple probably should have done earlier on, or they could have made a transition to USB-C earlier too. I do remember like when the Lightning cable like was first rolling out. I was on like a CNBC panel with people. I think it was faster than USB-C at the time, but also USB-C was like really nascent. Like it wasn't really in a lot of devices. So that was a point where Apple could have gone either way. The Lightning cable is smaller. It's smaller and it's like easier to plug in technically. So I could see why they made that initial choice.
Yeah, back then
that was 10 years ago. So yeah, it's time
and also,
to switch. Yeah.
Back then, compared to what else we were having at that size, micro USB, good Lord. Micro USB, you said to figure out the right way to plug it in. Yeah, so this one, Lightning had that beauty of being like reversible.
Yeah.
And like it didn't matter which way. So that was cool. But now we've moved on, Apple. You should move along too.
It's time. It takes forever because all those devices, everything you talked about, the MFI program, if you bought a little radio, if you bought anything that connected to Lightning, it's dead now. Which it reminds me of all those hotels that invested in like little iPod speakers.
Yes.
And I still see them with the old
the
connector.
Clock radios?
With
yeah,
the old
oh my
thing.
Lord.
Like, you know,
the fat one, the big one, yeah.
The big one.
The wider one.
So big. But anyway, folks, new Thunderbolt. Sounds like it's going to be fun. Another thing I just wanted to quickly mention. Hey, for fans of Silent Hill, which I feel like you should play these games, really.
I haven't played it, but I've watched the movie.
Weird games. Yeah. We finally have some news. Oh, my God. It's been a decade since the last Silent Hill game, and nobody liked that one. It was a Vita game. Several things are happening. There's a Silent Hill 2 remake incoming. Silent Hill 2 is sort of like a masterpiece in the horror game genre. Like it is the game the Silent Hill series has always been trying to kind of go back to. It's the one I think fans like are really just devoted to. So to see Silent Hill 2 come back, maybe that could be good. It could also, I'm more worried about companies like not really achieving the vibe and the sort of like creepiness that we had on older systems, especially now that everything is super high resolution. There are also several new games coming. So that's kind of cool. There's Townfall, which looks like, let me see here. Townfall looks like a typical old school Silent Hill game. There's Ascension, which is an interactive streaming series brought to you by J.J. Abrams. So that's kind of cool. Apparently, the entire community will be able to shape the canon of Silent Hill. According to this, face your trauma together is the tagline of this thing. That's coming sometime next year. And then there's Silent Hill F, from a creator that's known for like visual novels and things like that. So it's set in 1960s Japan. The trailer looks really cool. I do like the vibes, the sort of like creepy, just weird vibes of Silent Hill. Have you played any of these games? I guess you've seen some of them, right?
I've not played. So what platform is this? Like big consoles?
It's been
or
all,
like...
all PlayStation, like or since early on. Yeah.
So it's PlayStation only? Oh, I guess here's a reason for me to buy a PS5. No,
well,
I don't really want to play.
These are
going to
be on everything, it sounds like, but yeah.
The new ones are going to be on everything? Okay.
The new one, the remake, there it's very confusing, but the remake is going to be for PC and PlayStation 5. I'm not sure about the other titles, so we shall see.
Okay. Yeah, if I can play something on PC, I'll play it on PC. But for me, it's like, this sounds like exactly the kind of game I like to play. I used to play Resident Evil. Was it Resident Evil? Yeah. Resident Evil.
You're saying
on
that
the
confused.
Arcade,
like, yes, Resident
arcade
Evil.
Machines.
On the arcade machine.
It, like when you go to an arcade, you throw in coins and you're like starting to play. Yeah, those.
You mean House of the Dead?
Pick a real gun. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was talking about. Not Resident Evil, House of the Dead.
I feel like I can't talk about games with you, Shalyn. I don't know.
No, yeah, it's as if we have a brand or something.
It's like a brand. If you want to get into a weird, creepy horror game universe, I feel like Silent Hill is like the good brand of messed up. I do feel like there are more bad Silent Hill games than good ones at this point, but Silent Hill 2 is really good. Another thing I just want to mention too, wild news that Return to Silent Hill is going to be a movie sequel to that movie that initially hit in like 2006. And it's going to be directed by the same French director, Christophe Gans. I feel like I'm the only person on earth that kind of likes that movie. I like the games just fine, but Christophe Gans is like a really interesting visual filmmaker. He's also done several kick-ass movies with Mark Dacascos, including like Brotherhood of the Wolf, which is also, it is a French period horror martial arts movie. Like that, it is French peasants who also kick ass for no reason, and also there's a wolf, there is like a werewolf type creature or something prowling the countryside. That is a beautiful movie. I think Christophe Gans is a like wonderful visual stylist, so maybe check out that movie, Shalyn. I feel like that's
I've seen it and I didn't hate it. Yeah, like, I knew fine. It got really bad reviews. I was just like, huh, why did people? I thought it was, mm-hmm, like you said, visually very interesting. I remember a lot of fog and there was this bridge scene or something. Yeah, I know. It's the whole thing. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I remember liking the atmosphere, and whenever my TV gets fixed or I get a new one, I'll
you should get a new one, because that wasn't hand me down from Sam.
Yeah, it was. TV? Yeah. Okay. So, and it was when he handed it down to me, it was like 7 or 8.
It was already
years
old. So, yeah, okay. Yeah. Let's talk TVs soon, Shirlin. Yep. We can help you find a good TV for your space.
Yep.
Always down for that. But anyway, a whole bunch of Silent Hill things coming. I feel like fans of that series have just been beaten down over the past decade, because there was a game, it was called PT, that potentially was going to be a Silent Hill type game or something in that universe from Hideo Kojima and the director Guillermo del Toro. That game just fell apart. Like Konami didn't release it, and there was a demo that was super popular that people just now hold on to for dear life. Like they will like, you can buy PlayStation 4s with that game installed preloaded, because you can't download it from the store right now. People have hacked ways to get it to run on PlayStation 5s. It is just this like weird little morsel of what a next generation version of PT would have looked like. Meanwhile, Capcom has gone and just like revamped the Resident Evil franchise entirely by going first person. It kind of like PT, actually, and also remaking a lot of their popular games too. So we also know, I think they showed us a glimpse of the Resident Evil 4 remake coming soon. Really interesting rivalry happening here. Poor Silent Hill fans. I feel for you. Yeah.
What if Capcom did like Street Fighter meets Resident Evil? Like they put the Street Fighter characters in a haunted house fighting zombies. I think that would be so. Anyway, business developer hat on again, I guess. Anyway.
You know what, Shirlin? That is not the dumbest idea I've heard.
Right?
When it comes to this franchise. So, yes, sure. Why not?
Exactly. Why not?
Chun-Li versus zombies. Please. Yes. I would love to see it. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I've got a couple things incoming. We will be reviewing the new Surface devices. I've got the Pro 9 incoming. It looks like the Pro 9 5G, so I can really like do some little arm testing.
So the arm one, oh boy. Uh-huh.
And see how that goes. And I've also been talking with Magic Leap. You remember them?
Yeah.
They were the super hyped up, company that raised, I think, close to $2 billion in funding for their AR headset. And it all kind of fell apart a couple of years ago because nobody bought the headsets. They didn't really have a business plan. They didn't disappear. They have been hard at work on the Magic Leap 2 headset, which just recently launched to like mainstream buyers. It is more enterprise focused, but it is. I just did a demo of it here in Atlanta. Somebody was like nice enough to meet me by hotel by the airport, just be like show off this device, and man, it looks really good. Like we are all clowning on Magic Leap right now. I feel like a lot of people are just by the name and the branding, but this AR headset, I put it on. It's super comfortable. It has a taller field of view, so it's like taller than it was before, slightly wider, but I was able to like see virtual models of like a robotic arm or like some sort of like industrial equipment. And it's like very bright, very tall. Like it is entirely within my field of view. Whereas when I tried Magic Leap 1, you basically had like a tiny little square, like a little periscope square where you could see the AR stuff. And HoloLens 2 even is a little wider. It's like a wide window, but it's still like very cut off. You have to tilt your head up and down to see a full figure in HoloLens 2. This one is just like, boom. It's just right there. I think it's really interesting. They're not aiming at consumers with this thing, but it is, I think it's going to be fascinating to see where this goes, especially with the Quest Pro incoming soon. I will tell you this. They worked on this technology to black out your surroundings, like black out what you're seeing. So the screen can, you know, AR, an AR device or an AR object looks almost holographic. It's almost transparent. Magic Leap has developed this technology to black out the entire like screen so that it almost looks like you're wearing a VR headset, so you cannot see the real world. Typically, you can see the real world through. It's like transparent, you know, plastic. But they black it out, and then you only see the AR object. And then it's like, that was really interesting to me because it was something I had never seen before. And it really made that object pop a lot more. It also blocked out the world around me a little bit, too. So they've got some interesting things going. They're not looking at consumers at this point. This is all like industrial use. But I'll be writing something about the new tech behind this. I think the blackout feature looks kind of incredible. But I also think nobody is taking Magic Leap seriously anymore. So I guess we will see. What are you working on, Sherlyn?
So I have quite a lot of devices sort of sitting around. I wouldn't say they're like in my back pocket, but it's things that we're going to prioritize. We're just figuring out what order I do them in. So I have the new Kindle, and that's the base Kindle, not like not a Scribe or a Paperwhite or Oasis. It's the basic cheap as butt Kindle.
It's a very feature, like it has a lot of features now. So yeah.
Exactly. So that's the next review coming out for me. I don't think we're going to do a video of that, but we will have a written one. I'm also still reviewing the Apple Watch Series 8 because we haven't published our full review of that yet. So I've been, you know, continuing to like, I've switched out from the Watch Ultra to the Series 8, and I honestly am less annoyed. So that's good. And we've got also the Fitbit Sense 2, which I've had for a while now, but have been working with Fitbit / Google to kind of iron out some of the kinks that I was experiencing at the start. And so that's why we didn't get our review up before the Pixel Watch for that one. But that's also on the back burner. And then I have a different ARM-based laptop. This is the first Snapdragon-powered ThinkPad. So that's in my apartment.
Too many things.
A lot of things.
You're going to be reviewing until we have to start getting ready for CES, basically.
Yep. Yeah. This is why whenever I complain about cognitive overload, this is why. Because there's so much stuff in my RAM.
Too much stuff. Yeah. Bear with us, folks. But also, check out Trillin's coverage. Check out all our coverage. And leave some comments. Like, let us know if you're liking what you're seeing. If you'd like us to
let me know what to prioritize. Yeah. Let me know what you want me to review next. Also, yeah, I'm working on becoming the next fitness tech expert in the industry. So
Very cool. You probably have to topple somebody for that at this point. But okay, good luck. I believe in you, Sherlyn. There are a couple other pieces happening around Engadget. Roberto Baldwin wrote up his feelings on the Lucid Air electric car after it got a major update. Apparently it's faster and more nimble. It looks really cool. And we also produced a collection, a buyer's guide of the best portable Bluetooth speakers for 2022 from John Turi. If you have ever asked me about Bluetooth speakers, just go look at this thing, because John Turi did a good job of looking at all the like best devices out there right now. Personally, I'd say just get one of the Logitech UE devices, like the Ultimate Ears. Logitech speakers are fantastic. They've always been good. Personally, I've been really liking my the Sonos Move, the one that has the little bass and you can take it outside. So my daughter just had a birthday party and I was able to like, you know, take it outside, blast some like Disney pop tunes while the kids were playing in the bounce house, and it was perfect. Perfect. And it also synced up with all the devices in my home and another Sonos portable speaker. So, hey, I like speakers. Check out this guide. Let's move over to our pop culture picks. What you got, Sherlyn?
God, because I haven't been really doing a lot other than listen to things. So this is going to be a very audio forward set of picks. It will be, first of all, the new song Unholy by Sam Smith and Kim Petras has been in my head forever. I like it. It's nice. And also this K-pop band called New Jeans. People who follow me on Instagram know I've been like really talking them up recently. They're very young, very, very young girls in a band, but their music is very nice, very like kind of K-Tren chill. It's good. But something that maybe Devendra and Ben, you're more familiar with is the podcast, right? So I've been listening slash watching. And last week while you were you here?
I was here.
Were you here last week?
Well, I have to leave at a certain point.
Oh, last week after you left, I recommended the Try Guys content, right?
Oh my God. Yes, yes. Yeah. I heard
I'm not done. I'm not done. I've been listening to the podcast that involves their partners and wives and whatnot, called You Can Sit With Us. They're actually that podcast surprisingly does even better than the primary podcast sometimes. So I've been listening to that. They tackle it's basically a very lifestyle focused podcast, and I think the draw of most podcasts like that is the people, right? And
that's what it is.
They've got some good people.
It's just one of those things where I vaguely know who they are. I remember them from some of the BuzzFeed stuff right? And it's like, I guess anybody can just become famous if you just get a devoted fan base.
This point, that's my goal. Just become like just a, be a nobody and then be famous.
A little bit famous. There's a line in Mad Max Fury Road, is it every once long ago everybody had a show or something like that? I feel like it's that sort of thing. But okay, I'm happy for you, Sholin. I hope this content brings you some joy in your very, very busy life. I want to quickly shout out Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is the anime series. It's an anime prequel to Cyberpunk 2077. It's very good. I really dig it. It is it's about a high school kid who's going to this preppy school, and through circumstances, finds himself equipped with a very powerful cyberpunk exoskeleton, or I guess endos. It is like a skeleton augmentation. It's kind of a revenge story in a way, too. It's about him getting into the underworld, avenging the death of his mother. But I am just really pointing it out because it's produced by Studio Trigger, and they have made some of my favorite, anime shows and movies of the last decade. Things like Kill la Kill and Promare. This is a really good looking show. I think it's really cool. So if you're into anime and you're into cyberpunk, I'd say check it out.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at thefilmcast.com for my Filmcast podcast.
If you want to tell me what other hats I can wear, I am at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. Just a heads up for people who tune in to our live stream of this podcast that happens typically Thursday mornings at about 10 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel. Next week, October 27th, we will not be doing a live stream because our live stream team will be returning from a work trip and they need a break. So join us the week after. See you then.